Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Thursday, August 27th, 2015. This is my last podcast for about 3 weeks. I'm going to clean off my desk and share the odds and ends with you. It's been a wild and wacky summer. Lana Del Rey's Got It Right left me with a fair amount of sadness. Because, like many, I had no idea the Donald Trump circus was coming to town. And the hatred and resentment, the irrational thought that he has unleashed, talking about immigration in particular, has really cast an unhealthy pall across what is left of political dialogue in this country. And the other orchestrated effort, which is having some success, is this campaign to score political points with Republican primary voters by defunding Planned Parenthood. And so the summer of 2015 will be seen as a period where we had record heat waves, not only in the United States, but around the globe, and we continue to take no action. Because we're distracted by these petty domestic squabbles. There should be no battle over Planned Parenthood, over access to contraception and cancer screening and treatment of STDs. You're tired of hearing me say that 97% of what they do has no relationship to abortion. And yet, it is the abortion opponents in this country who are having a field day right now. Because they can release one video after another of these manipulated, gotcha, hidden camera conversations with Planned Parenthood executives. And they build the phony case. The main business of Planned Parenthood is selling what they call baby parts. Now, these aren't babies, these are fetuses. And the body parts that they give for research and for experimental medical procedures are not violating any standards. And these are the same people who think that birth begins, or that life begins, at erection. And it's not scientific in any way. And no rational arguments will dissuade these rabid anti-abortionists, because they'll use whatever means available, and they're doing it. And so this month of August in particular, as Congress has largely been out of Washington, we've seen a lot of mischief. And, as I've related to you, I'm very concerned that in general the Democrats are not responding. They are looking at the polls, they're looking at their own individual political futures and saying, well, you know, it's too risky to stand up for Planned Parenthood, to stand up for fundamentals like family planning, to give a woman a choice when she gets pregnant. And we see a fair number of evangelical women joining with ignorant men in an effort to rewrite the rules and impose external controls on women's reproductive rights. And for me, it's stunning, because I came of age at a time when the birth control pill was first developed, when Roe versus Wade legalized the choice of an abortion in this country. And I feel like we are moving back into the dark ages. So Planned Parenthood got some independent analysts to review these manipulated videos and confirmed what we knew from the get-go, that the videos were deceptively and misleadingly edited in order to fuel the rabble, to give them something to be angry about. It drives their protests even further. So they went through a whole process. They got an independent transcriber to transcribe the full-length video and the edited video, and that way they were able to determine what had been cut out. But proving that the videos were manipulated doesn't change the impression, because propaganda is most effective on the first look. That's when people's attitudes get cemented, and it's very hard to change that impression, even when you undermine it with hard facts and provable evidence. And as the Donald Circus has taken over the media, we see Republican presidential candidates more and more desperate to get attention. And at the end of this podcast, we'll give Roy Rogers the day off today. I've got a treat for you. It's a brand new song by the satiric minstrel and a longtime friend of the Peter B. Collins Show, Roy Zimmerman. It's called The Republican Big Tent. And I'm going to link to the YouTube video because the song is cool, but when you see it with the graphics that Roy has assembled, I think you'll enjoy it even more. So you got your Bobby Jindal, right? Nationally polling at 1% or less in his quest to be president. And because Donald Trump has pushed him out of media coverage, he said, what can I do? Let's see, Obama's coming to town to give a speech on the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Yeah, let's hammer Obama over some liberal policy. So Jindal sent a letter to the White House, apparently it arrived yesterday, demanding that President Obama not mention the environment when he comes to New Orleans to talk about Hurricane Katrina. Jindal, in particular, does not want him to bring up global warming or the idea that the government has an obligation to deal with climate change. Huh? Quote, although I understand that your emphasis in New Orleans will rightly be on economic development, the temptation to stray into climate change politics should be resisted, Jindal advised. Now, where does he get off telling the president what to say? While you and others may be of the opinion that we can legislate away hurricanes with higher taxes, business regulations, and EPA power grabs, that is not a view shared by many Louisianans. Now, this is just such utter bullshit. Obama's never said that you can legislate away hurricanes, much less with higher taxes or business regulations. And so, this is just another attack on what Jindal derides as liberal environmental activism. And he'd prefer not to alarm the denizens of Louisiana, and in particular New Orleans, that despite the billions spent to reinforce and rebuild New Orleans with a lot less black people, that New Orleans is still vulnerable to the next hurricane, and hurricanes are going to be more extreme because of climate change. And if Bobby Jindal wants to remain in denial about that, maybe that's his right, but as a leader or a potential president, well, that's just crazy. Here's another Republican candidate desperate for attention, Carly Fiorina, the only woman in the 17-member Republican field. And she's playing the gender card, basically saying that because she's a woman that she should get extra points from CNN and should be included among the top 10 in the primetime debate that is scheduled for September 16th. And frankly, Fiorina, whose poll numbers have risen from 2% to 5%, well, that's still right at the margin of error, Carly. And I know you tout your great experience as a business leader, but you can count numbers, right? And you know what the margin of error means? Now, what this really comes down to is a struggle between Fiorina and Chris Christie, who I think is holding on to the 10th spot by his chubby fingers. And, you know, Carly Fiorina, like all the rest of them, recites a bunch of talking points that are largely divorced from reality. And she talks tough about Iran. She has absolutely no experience other than cutting international business deals and running Hewlett-Packard into the ground. And so, in some ways, you know, I want to see her get more attention because I think the more people focus on her, the more they will see her defects. And we know them well here in California. She ran for the Senate in 2010, and it was a very empty campaign. Pretty similar to what she's doing today. Now, Hillary Clinton has her own problems. Certainly, Donald Trump has weakened her access to the media. But the media only wants to talk to Hillary about emails, and she says that, gosh, nobody ever talks to me about that except you guys, referring to reporters. Well, the New York Times interviewed 75 Democratic governors, lawmakers, candidates, and party members, and reports what they call widespread bewilderment and concern over the way Hillary is dealing with the email issues. And by the way, I think this is a substantive issue. We know that Hillary chose to use a private server to try to avoid scrutiny of her emails. And as they're coming out in batches, as the judge who was responding to Jason Leopold's lawsuit ordered, we're seeing interesting connections that are revealed by these emails. The Sidney Blumenthal stuff about Libya. The issues that Steve Horn raised in our recent podcast about policy toward Mexico, fracking, and the privatization of the national oil company Pemex. And so I think that there are a lot of nervous Democrats. And some of them think Joe Biden should parachute into the rescue. I don't see him as a viable candidate either. But one of the things that really galls me, there's this one woman on my Facebook page who talks in this kind of reverse sexist manner. And she threatens to defriend anybody who criticizes Hillary Clinton. Because after all, when you do that, you are simply a tool of the Republican right. And I'm so infuriated by this attitude by many Hillary supporters that Hillary and the supporters are entitled to her candidacy without challenge. And they want to elbow out of the way and muzzle thoughtful people who say, well, what if Hillary loses? What if Hillary crawls to the nomination as damaged goods? Even Ed Rendell, who I don't care for at all, the former Democratic governor of Pennsylvania, he says they've handled the email issue poorly, maybe atrociously, certainly horribly. That's a friend of Hillary's, all right? And so this saga continues to drip, drip, drip blood from the Clinton juggernaut. And sooner or later, I think there'll be a day of reckoning. Now, I think it's quite possible that Hillary Clinton will withdraw before the end of this year to avoid the embarrassment of losing in the primaries. Every day I like to pause and thank the people who support my work at the Peter B. Collins Podcast. As you know, I'm about to embark on a three-week break. I plan to return on September 22nd, and that is the day when we'll introduce the new website setup and theme. That's the date that we'll give you the information on the new RSS feeds. So your feeds will be quiet for the next few weeks. I will not be posting any podcasts while I'm away. And so we will give you the information when we launch the new system, and that'll be on about the 22nd of September. So do be looking for that, particularly my long-term supporters and subscribers. I want to keep each and every one of you and make it easier for you to get the Peter B. Collins podcasts. And I mean you, Marianne Razzo, Joey Perillo, and Wendy Gebauer. They are all monthly subscribers to this podcast, along with Paul Elsesser, the generous, longtime supporter who does much more than he needs to keep this podcast going. So in the meantime, check out peterbcollins.com. There are plenty of podcasts that are there that you probably never got around to listening to. So go ahead and browse and find a gem, and I will be back with you on the 22nd of September. A couple of notes for Bobby Jindal, the Louisiana governor and guy who doesn't want Obama to talk about climate change in New Orleans? Well, a new study's been released, and about one-fifth of all countries in the world will face acute water shortages by 2040 because climate change disrupts rainfall patterns and growing population pushes up demand. The Middle East, obviously, is deeply affected. And let me just run down the countries that are at risk in order. Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, San Marino, Singapore, United Arab Emirates, Palestine, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Lebanon, Kyrgyzstan, Iran, Jordan, Libya, Yemen, Macedonia. So those are nations that are at serious risk of water shortages in the next 25 years. Here's another item for Bobby Jindal, if anybody can manage to bust his bubble and get some reality to him. A new report about deforestation and climate change contains a dire warning. If the world continues along its business-as-usual path, an amount of tropical forest nearly equal to the size of India could be lost between now and 2050. That's over 1 million square miles. And the deforestation continues despite the obvious linkage. We know that keeping those trees, the trees absorb carbon and store it. And when you destroy the trees, most often that wood is processed or burned in ways that release that carbon. And these are fundamentals that we can address if we find the will to do so. Well, Al Sharpton has been notified by MSNBC that they are going to drop his daily television show and give him a show on the weekend. Now, Ed Schultz didn't even get the sop of a weekend show. Ed was bumped once before. They pushed him to the weekends, and then they brought him back to the weekday lineup only to can him completely about a month ago. And I have to say, it's always been a stinky deal. Al Sharpton is a man I have no respect for. I've followed him for years. I've met him several times. I find him personally distasteful. He is a shrill huckster. And while there are times when he has done a decent job representing African Americans in conflict situations, most often he's an ambulance-chasing, headline-chasing activist who had no business anchoring a television news show. And we know that MSNBC hired him in a sordid deal where he endorsed the NBC-Comcast merger. And for that and other favors, NBC put him on television for an hour a day. And the real reason they're canceling it is because nobody watched. But I have to tell you, every time I see Al Sharpton arrive at the scene of a conflict that involves African Americans, I cringe. News from over there in the war that nobody cares about? We are claiming that we've killed, via drone strike in Syria, the Islamic State's cyber caliphate hacking team leader. Junaid Hussein, a British national, is believed to have died on Tuesday when we blew up a vehicle near the Syrian city of Raqqa. Now, let me point out that the U.S. has no authority to conduct these raids in Syria, but that doesn't bother anybody, except, I guess, me. And, of course, Congress refuses to use its to do its duty and pass any war powers resolutions of any kind. They only pass funding resolutions and provide money for a war that their fingerprints don't appear on. So, we don't really know if this guy died because his wife, Britain Sally Jones, the former punk rocker, I don't know who she rocked for, but she tweeted that she is happy to report that her blessed, she is blessed that her husband is still alive. So this could be another fake claim by the U.S., and it points up that you can drop a lot of bombs from the sky, even precision drone strikes, and not know what happens on the ground. And it's one of the reasons why the sellout of the Kurdish fighters in order to bring Turkey into the game is not only immoral, but it's a big mistake. And we'll get to more on that in a second. So the Islamic State claims a couple of scalps, including two Iraqi generals who were killed in a suicide bomb attack near the town in Anbar province near Ramadi, which is controlled by the Islamic State. The two generals and three soldiers plus the suicide bomber were all killed. Now, this one we're not as doubtful about. The Iraqi military has admitted they lost two of their generals, And this report reiterates that hundreds of civilians have been killed as the result of U.S. airstrikes in Iraq and Syria, and U.S. authorities acknowledge that two civilian deaths have occurred in the past year. Just a little credibility gap there, wouldn't you say? Now to the strategy or lack thereof. An interesting opinion piece by an insider, a Beltway insider, in today's New York Times. Eric Edelman is the former U.S. ambassador to Turkey, and anybody who's been ambassador to Turkey is involved in the spook community, in my opinion. He also was the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in the second Bush term. So Eric Edelman, consider the source, writes about America's dangerous bargain with Turkey. And he says the price of the agreement may well be too high, both for the success of America's anti-Islamic State campaign and for the stability of Turkey. He notes that Erdogan, the president of Turkey, entered into this deal primarily for domestic political considerations to save his own butt and solidify his grip on power there. And Edelman acknowledges what I've been saying, that American and Turkish policies were always rooted in different visions of what Syria would look like if and when we got rid of Bashar al-Assad. And the different priorities play out in the way the Turkish government has, instead of attacking the Islamic State as the U.S. thought they would, they're attacking Turkish citizens of Kurdish ethnic origin. And they're also driving a wedge between the U.S. and the Kurdish Peshmerga fighters of both the PKK and the PYD, who've been the only effective ground troops confronting the Islamic State in Syria and in Iraq. And as I've mentioned, this is a huge sellout by Team Obama. They're throwing the Kurds under the bus or under a jet fighter with bombs and betting that the deal with Turkey will produce the desired result. Only Obama doesn't articulate what that is. Are we still waiting to topple the government of Bashar al-Assad? Or is the American military effort exclusively focused on rolling back the Islamic State? Well, Edelman correctly calls it a Faustian bargain. And he says, in the long run, undercutting the Kurds will be extremely damaging to the anti-Islamic State effort, since allowing Turkey to create a no-go zone for Kurdish forces will not carve out territory for moderate fighters. Oh, those mythical moderate fighters. Instead, it risks creating a safe haven for Islamist groups like Nusra Front and Ahrar al-Sham, whose growing strength will exacerbate the toxic sectarianism and ethnic violence in Syria. It's a lose-lose proposition, and we are in over our eyeballs. The Associated Press has sued the Department of Justice, and this is a case we've talked about before. In 2014, AP filed a Freedom of Information Act request regarding a case where the FBI posed as an FBI agent, posed essentially as an AP reporter. And in order to trick a 15-year-old boy suspected of making bomb threats to his high school, they sent him a link to a fake web article, a news article, I think, that was about the bomber, hoping to get the kid to click on it so that they could then track his computer. And the AP is hopping mad. They've objected to this. The FBI both misappropriated the trusted name of the Associated Press and created a situation where our credibility could have been undermined on a large scale. That's AP General Counsel Karen Kaiser. It is improper and inconsistent with a free press for government personnel to masquerade as the AP or any other news organization. Amen. But that won't stop them. Jim Comey, the current head of the FBI, says that such a move would now require his approval. And he said it might be more difficult to get that approval, but he didn't suggest that he wouldn't give it. We told you about a month ago of the riots and prison break from Arizona's facility in Kingman. a prison that has been privately run by a corporation called Management and Training Corporation based in Utah. I am a bitter opponent of privatization of prisons. This is a government function. And when you sub it out to a corporation, you lose control. And Management and Training Corporation clearly didn't have control in Kingman because the riots broke out and they had to transfer 1,200 inmates to different facilities. Well, the new Republican governor of Arizona, his name is Doug Ducey, he announced on Wednesday that he is canceling the contract with Management and Training. I think that's the least that they can do. Also, I want to acknowledge that in Brooklyn, the new district attorney there has been busy exonerating individuals who were convicted by his predecessors. Now, 14 people have been freed and exonerated in Brooklyn. During the last month, a man named Joel Fowler was released after spending more than 7 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit, and a serious crime, second-degree murder. Well, his wrongful conviction was vacated because Ken Thompson, the new district attorney who took office a year ago January, has been running the DA's conviction review unit and has released 14 men as a result of exoneration. And I think it's important to note this, because most people think that if somebody's been convicted, it's a slam dunk. They're 100% guilty. And we know that there are many miscarriages of justice that occur on a regular basis. Yesterday's grisly on-air shooting of a TV reporter and her camera operator by a former co-worker certainly has gotten a lot of reaction across the country. And we learned here in the Bay Area that the shooter who reportedly took his own life after the event, and after he posted his own video of shooting the young reporter. His name is Vester Lee Flanagan II. He's from the Bay Area. He grew up in Oakland. His dad is a fairly prominent civil rights activist. And he learned television at San Francisco State University. He worked as an intern and then as a news writer at the CBS station here in San Francisco. And I don't know his direct path to Roanoke, Virginia, but that's where he wound up. He was described as a troubled employee who created a lot of problems. And I heard Rush Limbaugh this morning add a little element of homophobia to it because Vester Lee Flanagan was gay. He was black and gay, and so Rush was describing him as a guy with a victim problem, and that the liberals are going to defend Flanagan and blame the gun. Well, guns are inanimate objects. No matter what Rush Limbaugh says, he's trying to paint this as some, homosexual, African-American, victimized payback, when it's obviously the work of a deranged guy who happens to be black and happens to be gay. And it is the access to guns by a deranged person that's the real problem here. And the father of the reporter who was killed, Allison Parker, has pledged, like so many survivors of these victims, that he's going to work for gun control. But we've seen that the NRA, which really runs this country, is not about to permit that to happen. And when you kind of zoom out and look at these tragic events of gun violence, it takes 2 or 3 years for the criminal justice system to process a case and result in a conviction and sentence. And it was in July of 2012 that James Holmes shot up the Batman premiere at the movie theater in Colorado. And his trial's been a long one. We've covered it here and there. But fundamentally, it's clear to me the guy was crazy. Sure, we have better words for that: diminished capacity, unable to know what he was doing. But he's clearly a mentally ill and deranged individual. And I take no solace that we maintained and proceeded with a prosecution against a man who's clearly mentally ill. But I am gratified that a single juror refused to vote for the death penalty. And so the judge was left with no choice but to sentence him to life in prison. And it was gratuitous because he sentenced him to life without the possibility of parole and then added another 3,312 years. Now that's meaningless. It's grandstanding. And the judge, who was under fire from victims' families because he was unable to deliver the death penalty that they demanded for retribution, he grandstanded at the sentencing. After he passed sentence, he told the deputies, "Get the defendant out of my courtroom, please." Then he went on, "The defendant does not deserve any sympathy. For that reason, the court imposes the maximum sentence it can impose under the law." "It's almost impossible," said the judge, "to comprehend how a human being is capable of such acts." Well, you've got to allow for mental illness. But that was the one thing that was ruled out in this courtroom proceeding. Now, I believe that James Holmes did the deed. And as I said, I am relieved that he didn't get the death penalty, because I don't support the death penalty, even in extreme cases like this. But the process still leaves a whole lot to be desired. Speaking of which, one final comment for you today on the case here in San Francisco, where the FBI set up what they called a sting operation. And we now know that the FBI spent more than $1 million on fancy hotels like the Ritz-Carlton, the Four Seasons, the Fairmont. And they spent lavishly wining and dining the suspects they were entrapping at the 5A5 Steakhouse, Morton's Steakhouse, the Starlight Room. They wined and dined people at the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas. And you and I are paying for that. And what they ended up with was a frame-up of a state senator, Leland Yee, who took a guilty plea and we'll never hear from him again. But a guy they tried to frame is a former criminal, a former convict, named Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow. And he's fighting. He's in court today demanding dismissal of the charges against him because of selective prosecution. And his lawyers argue that the mayor of San Francisco had operatives who took campaign contributions from these FBI agents posing as investors and spending lavish amounts of taxpayer dollars. But Ed Lee, the mayor, is not being prosecuted. His operatives who accepted that money have not been charged with a crime. But they're going to get the shrimp boy. And I know his lawyer, Tony Serra, and Tony is not a guy to be trifled with. And this egregious spending in order to create the traps that some elected officials and their cronies walked into, well, I'm sorry, it does not pass the smell test. And as I get ready to traipse off into the sunset and enjoy a 3-week break, I'll report to you on my travels when I return. I want to share with you a new political satire tune by our friend Roy Zimmerman. And it honors all 17 of the Republican candidates for president this year. It's called The Big Republican Tent. And you can listen to it now, but I'll put up the link in the show file for this podcast. You can click on that and watch the YouTube video. It's worth it. And until next time, happy trails to you.
Step right up, you gotta hurry, hurry, right this way into the big top, the Republican tent. You'll see the presidential circus unfold before your eyes. The clown car arrives, nobody drives, out they all tumble to greet you. Jeb Bush is performing balloon tricks and japes, twisting hot air into curious shapes. Thrill to Chris Christie, don't get him pisty, makes other strong men look puny.
Shut up!
Marvel at the bender of the truth, you've never seen a contortionist as talented as Carly Fiorina. Welcome each lady and gent to
to the big Republican tent. Come one, come all, witness Rand Paul follow in his father's missteps. Climbing the pole, just how high will he get? Flying so free and with no safety net. Now there's John Kasich, his act's pretty basic, but he's the guy who rigged the ring toss.
Everybody's a winner!
Ben Carson, Dr. Genius, who thinks science is so scary. Watch him as he sews a bigger brain into Rick Perry.
Oops.
Shoulda known that's how it might have went in the big Republican tent. Now here's Ted Cruz. He's the clown who's bound to shut down the whole circus. And Mike Chuckles Huckabee makes us all laugh, except when he's sawing a woman in half. Now here's the newbie, Lil Marco Rubio, the world's thirstiest baby. Amazing Bobby Jindal swallows swords and daggers, and he turns a somersault and tries to sell you cotton candy. Oh, what a magnificent event. 3, 2, 1, blam. Here's Lindsey Graham shooting himself from a cannon. If you like the sad clowns, George Pataki's your guy. He'll sing Pagliacci and make us all cry. Here's Rick Santorum preaching decorum. He's the creep running the peep show. And Scott, they call him tighter than a tightrope. Walkers firing all the roustabouts and cleaning out their lockers. That's a lot of clowns. Are there still more? Yes, Jim Gilmore, Invisible Jim. Nobody knows if it's him. And now he's entering the centering, the king of the clowns, Donald Trump. G-O-P-T Barnum, can he do it? Can he win it? Maybe, because they say that there's a sucker born each minute. Let's have a round of applause. And hurrahs and huzzahs and guffaws, because one of these clowns might be your president. From the big Republican